Nurse practitioners versus PAs, nursing home falls, infection control nursing, and a review of the CBC lab panel. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's the Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to the Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of the Nursing Show. In fact, this is episode 4, and I'll be looking at a variety of news topics as well as a tip of the week here in just a few moments. But first, a little bit of information on how you can find out more about the Nursing Show. You can head on over to nursingshow.com and you can find all of the links to everything I talk about in today's episode there, as well as other information, news, and commentary I'll be posting up throughout the week. You can also check back to all of the previous episode show notes and a whole bunch of other information all directly at nursingshow.com. If you want to reach me for comment on this show or anything else, you can reach me at comments@nursingshow.com, and I'll be sure to get back to you right away with my answer, either here on the Nursing Show or possibly even by email directly. So make sure you get in touch with me, let me know your suggestions, your comments, and if you have any corrections, so we can make sure that the information that goes out on the Nursing Show is the best information available for everyone. All right, enough of that contact information. Let's get on into the news for this episode of The Nursing Show. I will lead off the news today with a story out of the journal Annals of Family Medicine from the January-February 2008 issue. And this issue looked at practices of medicine involving nurse practitioners versus physicians alone and physician's assistant, specifically in the care of patients with diabetes and how they manage their diabetes. This looked at providing some types of diabetes management care in both practices with nurse practitioners and practices with either physicians alone or physician assistants. And in this study, the practices with nurse practitioners were more likely to test for some key markers, including the hemoglobin A1C levels and the patient lipid levels. Monitoring these two lab results will give an indication of the patient's compliance with their regimen, whether it be a dietary and medication regimen or insulin-taking regimen along with their diet. All of these things are important for maintaining long-term quality of health in these patients. The authors of this study were not willing to speculate as to why there was an increased use of this recommended lab test in the patient's practices with nurse practitioners. But at a time when more nurse practitioners and physician's assistants are brought in to help alleviate the additional costs of maintaining larger patient loads among the physician's practices, it is probably important for people to look into why these tests aren't being performed in some practices and they are being performed in others. In any case, at least in these studies with these 45 medical practices, the nurse practitioners seem to be more frequently performing the studies, tests, and measurement factors that were recommended by the American Diabetes Association. So let's move on into another topic area having to do with falls and restraining patients in long-term care environments. This is from a long-term study, 4-year study, on reducing falls in nursing homes. And the study found that occasional use of selective restraints of elderly residents, as well as reducing the medication loads, could go far in reducing the rate of falls with these patients. This study out of Sweden looked at 2,300 patients related to falls and fractures in 5 different nursing homes. and they wanted to see how the rate of their falls related to certain risk assessments and the use of things like safety restraining belts in wheelchairs, restraints in bed, and the use of sleeping pills or other medications to sedate the patients. And what they found was that reducing the medication load in these patients and watching for and the use of some physical restraints, what the study found was that in the patient's facilities where some restraints were used, and in the facilities where the medication load was reduced, either the use of sleeping pills, antidepressants, or in some cases benzodiazepines, that the patients had a reduced rate of fall and, of course, reduced rate of injury related to those falls. So this seems like common sense, right? If we reduce the sleeping pill dose, if we use some form of restraint to help the person either not get out of bed or not fall out of their wheelchair, that we would keep them from falling. But in many cases in long-term care facilities where especially staffing problems occur, staffing issues and not having enough people to watch all the residents all the time, it's important to find these little tweaks that can be done and looked at to reduce the risk of these patients falling. In the elderly patient, as we all know, anything that causes them to have an injury or increase their risk of having other complications related to those injuries, like infection, like DVT or pulmonary embolism or stroke, all of these things related to their fractures, we can go a long way to increasing their term of life. And that's something that any injury in an elderly person is likely to increase their rate of mortality. So this is just another study to look at that. And anybody who works in a long-term facility should certainly look at this study in more in depth and see how it might apply to their facility in particular. You can check out the links to this and all the other news items in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. Finally, I will wrap up with a look at infection control, specifically to an article I found coming out of the UK that is responding to an announcement that specialist nurses in hospitals are going to be put in place to deal specifically with hospital-acquired infections and infection control. And the Royal College of Nursing says this is a great idea. It's an announcement that, quote, is good news for patients and is a recognition of the important role nurses play in the prevention of and the control of healthcare-acquired infections, end quote. The statement from the Royal College of Nursing sounds like a statement that might be heard here in the United States, basically saying that providing for the announcement of something like this is one thing. Providing ongoing funding for hospital infection nurses is quite another thing. And the MRSA problem and other hospital-acquired infection problems are long-term issues that require long-term funding support. I'd like to hear back from you if you're involved in hospital infection control directly in your facility. Now, I know if you work in a facility, you should be involved in some regard with infection control, but I know that there's some people that are kind of put in charge of this kind of thing, and I'd like to hear more about it. I'd like to know what you're doing in your given area to try to reduce the transmission of and acquisition of hospital infections. It's something we all need to be aware of. And I think that if an educational institution is listening into the show, I'd be interested in hearing about whether there's likely to be an advanced certification in infection control nursing, similar to the ways there are advanced certifications in other areas of nursing. So that's a look at the news this week, a little bit of everything covered in those three news items, and I hope you enjoy it. You can find links to all of them in the show notes, and since the news is done, I guess it's time to jump on into this week's Nursing Show Tip of the Week. The tip and trick of the week this week, I thought I would look a little bit at a blood test we see quite frequently in patient charts, and a little bit about why we need to track some things a little differently than others, in my estimation. First of all, the complete blood count is a test we see quite frequently. We hear about it all the time. CBCs are taken in almost every hospital admission as a matter of routine to at least provide a baseline and also to give an idea of the patient's general status and overall health. It's also used to track changes in patient status over time while in a facility, and also to indicate the presence of or absence of things like anemias. But what does the complete blood count look at specifically? Well, let's look a little bit at some of the resources we have. I have a link in the show notes to the National Institutes of Health Medline Encyclopedia look at CBC. And while this is a bit of a layperson's view, it is a good overview and review for some of us. There are also, of course, many, many resources, laboratory books for nursing, as well as textbooks that are available to us that we can look in as well. But I find that often the Medline service over at the National Institutes of Health is a good starting point, and sometimes all I really need to cover these kinds of reviews. You're going to be looking in the CBC at the number of red blood cells, the composition and size of those red blood cells, and how they relate in volume to the plasma around them. You'll also be looking at a count of the white blood cells, and you'll also be looking at the different fractional cellular combinations present in the plasma as well. One thing I like to keep in mind whenever looking at any particular lab test, imaging result, or anything like that is to remember that it is a snapshot of the patient at a particular time, and that snapshot may no longer hold true. You need to remember that things change. So not only do you need to look at maybe the most recent test performed, you also need to go back and look at how the trend is progressing. So if you are a new nurse on the floor, you've been off all weekend, and you come in and there's a patient that's been there for a few days, when you get a chance, you need to not only look at their current blood test results, but you need to go back and maybe take a look at how they're trending, because it is the trending of things like vital signs, the trending of things like lab results, CBCs, and chem panels that are going to give you a better picture of the patient's progression in their recovery from whatever issue that they have presenting. And so it's important to see whether numbers are going up or going down. If a person is presenting in the normal range, but they entered the hospital where they were at the high end of the normal range, and now they're barely hanging on to the low end of the normal range, well, then that's an indication that there's been a change. And that change could be significant for that patient if their norm is at the top end. And so this is why you need to track and trend these kind of things. And yeah, the physicians are looking at this, and the other caregivers are monitoring this, but this is something that maybe you could pick up on and present back. So we'll look at this a little bit. The complete blood count starts with the count of the red blood cells. It also looks at your hemoglobin and your hematocrit levels. And while these are generally the same, they do differ depending on whether you're male, female, and whether you're a child or an adult. So it's important to refer to the lab values. And most of our labs print out the little stars or asterisks or whatever indicators there may be to tell us whether a number is high or low. And also looking at the size of the red blood cells. And this is because red blood cells tend to be pretty standard in size. They're one of those things that they all tend to be the same size and shape. And when there are differences in this scale, then that is an indication of a disease process. If the red blood cells are trending smaller, then that can be an indication of different types of anemia, and meaning that the red blood cells are younger and not as well formed. So you need to look at those particular studies, and those are the MCV, the MCH, the MCHC, and the RDW indexes that all indicate some portion of the red blood cell relationship in size and volume. In addition to the numbers surrounding red blood cell counts and the indexes that are associated with that, CBCs also count white blood cells. If you have a CBC that has included a differential, it may not only count the total white cells, but it may break out that count to look at specific types of white blood cells and their percentage of white blood cells in the count. And of course, this can indicate different types of infections, more so than just an elevated white count would by itself. So different types of infections or different types of anemia may be indicated when the differential is skewed from the norm. All of these things can also be picked up on in some cases by trending over time, even though they may be within normal limits. Finally, the CBC will also look at platelet count, and this is important to know because of reduced risk of bleeding, whether it's an intracranial bleed or a stroke, as well as other bleeding factors that may be involved. And it's important to note that this is another one of those values that needs to be trended over time, because a person may be carrying a normal platelet load very high at the normal end. And if their load of platelets drops, that can be an indication that they have something abnormal going on in their system. So they may not be technically thrombocytopenic, but they could be heading in that direction due to a problem such as too much heparin administration. You know, they could be heading towards a heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, and you might pick up on that if you notice that they came into the hospital with a high normal range of platelets in their blood, and now they are presenting almost off the bottom of the normal range in their platelet count. You should be looking at other problems. The other issue is that when patients are below their own normal platelet count or their own normal blood count, this impedes their body's recovery period. And so we need to do other things to make sure that we encourage their bodies to heal in an adequate fashion and help them back on that path. And so patients may not be under fall precautions, but if their platelets are low, they're going to experience increased bruising from bumping into the wall because they're a little off balance. They may not have fallen, but they may have more bruises showing up. And you should be aware of this. This is part of why you do some head-to-toe assessing on a regular basis of many patients, because we need to make sure that we notice these problems when they crop up. It may be an indication we can do some things to change their diet. We can go ahead and report these observations and make sure that the patient goes on to recover fully and gets home and back to their normal levels in all ways. So that's just a quick look at CBC. There's a whole lot more there. I mean, we could talk about just memorizing lab values, but quite frankly, those values are spelled out for us in our facility. We can tell when they're low or high in relation to population norms, but we need to also know whether they're low or high in relation to the patient's own norms. And that's going to wrap up this week's tip and trick of the week. I want to thank you for checking out The Nursing Show here at nursingshow.com. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic. If you want to send in any comments, any suggestions for future episodes, or perhaps want to make a correction, maybe I've misspoken in some way, I'd certainly want to make sure we get the correct information out. You can send all of that to me here directly to comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also leave comments directly over at The Nursing Show blog at nursingshow.com. Either way, I will be back again next week with some more information here at The Nursing Show, more news stories about nursing, as well as another Nursing Show tip and trick of the week. And you can find all of that here at The Nursing Show, as well as ways you can subscribe directly if you haven't already done so. I will wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show the way I always do, with some excellent PodSafe music from an artist who makes her songs available here to podcasters so that we can share that music with you. This week's artist is Caitlin Smith and her song, Hear Me. It's a great tune. It's one of the songs I've played before in my other podcast over at The Medic Cast. And if you like what you hear, make sure you head over to Caitlin's site and let her know you heard that song here on The Nursing Show. Until next time, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, making sure you all stay safe and stay tuned.